You had asked about theology of suffering, right? Okay. So, Sung Chan Ra, who I mentioned wrote The Next Evangelicalism, he also wrote a book called Prophetic Lament. And that book, he talks about how to have a theology of suffering. And I think what's important is that we not only look at the New Testament, but we look at the Old Testament. I mean, the first century Jews in many ways resemble majority world Christians. They were in a position of powerlessness, of marginalization, political oppression, poverty. They had widows and orphans and all, you know, people in need. And so I think it's important that we get our theology also from the Old Testament. I remember one time I was actually at a conference. It was the Evangelical Theological Society, and I was leading a study group, which I had founded. It was the World Christianity Study Group. And I no longer am doing that because ETS, I felt like, just didn't appreciate it at all. Like, you know, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink, right? So even though I ran this for several years, I felt like it was, not that it wasn't well received, but there was lack of interest in it. So I was like, this is really ironic that the Theological Society, like, didn't care that much about cross-cultural missional stuff, right? So, but anyway, when I was moderating this panel, we had several really good papers. One person did a paper about South American missions to the Middle East. Another person did a paper about honor shame gospel in China. And somebody else did a paper about an African view of the New Testament. So when this person said African view of the New Testament, there was one guy from the audience who raised his hand and said, how can you have an African view of the New Testament, right? I think this might have been in the book. But he said, isn't that like saying we need an African view on gravity, right? I was like, oh my. what was this guy's assumption when he asked that?
Western theology equals truth.
So he was basically saying, an African view of gravity, like, you don't need an African view of gravity, you just need a view of gravity. In other words, he was saying, my theology is like gravity. It's like just universal, indisputable truth. And he thought all other cultural theologies are relativistic or, you know. And so that I think, was, you know, this sort of, it caught me off guard. But then somebody else from the audience answered this in a really well way, or good way. He said, African culture today is much closer to first century biblical culture than we in America are, right? Like, 21st century America is like so radically different from first century Jewish culture that it's like to claim that we somehow have exclusive access and understand that truth, it just doesn't make any sense, right? So, but a lot of marginalized people are in the majority world. They look at the first century Jews and they're like, yeah, I get it, right? Like, they understand agrarian metaphors better than we do. They understand what the concept of sacrifice means better than we do. They understand persecution better than we do. I mean, you know, it's just like they get it. And so a lot of times I think it's not only that Africans or Asians or Latin Americans can offer different analogies. It's that I think they understand the original better than we do. And I think they understand that the original is not a triumphalistic gospel, but like triumph comes after the suffering, right? So you have to go through the suffering in order to get to the triumph. And to just take the shortcut, you know, you just want, and you know, the part of this is the millennial thing, right? So millennials, ironically, despite the fact that they suffer and have been traumatized, they want the quick fix. They want their first job to be, sorry, millennials, what I meant was Gen Z. I know people lump them in a lot together, but there's some similarities, some differences. Gen Z, they want the job, their first job to be, they want to be CEO of the company, right? It's like, nah, you know, Malcolm Gladwell popularized this idea of you have to work 10,000 hours before you get good at something, right? That's the grit idea. How can you put 10,000 hours into something? I mean, you can't become CEO without putting 10,000 hours into it first, right? And so, and I think that Gen Z, they often feel like they've already put in the work because they've suffered, right? But the thing is, you cannot, well, here's the theology of suffering, here, or here, the practical outworking. You know the phrase, whatever doesn't kill you only makes you stronger? I think that's wrong. Whatever doesn't kill you only makes you stronger is only half the truth. There are a lot of things that don't kill you but can maim you for life. I'm like, so if you break a leg, like it, if you set it properly, it heals well. But if you don't set it properly, you're hobbled for the rest of your life. So when you go through hard things, the question is, how do you deal with it? And if you deal with it in a bad way, you actually get more like messed up. PTSD or whatever. And if you deal with it in a good way, you can actually get stronger and become more healthy, right? So it really depends what you do with it. And so I think a lot of Gen Z feel like, okay, we've been through the suffering and therefore that qualifies us to reach the top. Did you deal with the suffering wisely? Did you deal with it in a way that is God-honoring and healthy, right? It's not suffering that... suffering it in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but it can be bad if you deal with it improperly. So I guess that's some of my ideas. Yeah. So we need to read the prophets. I think we need to read the Old Testament prophets more. Yeah. And it also takes seriously Jesus' teachings. Right? I mean, he calls us to take up our cross and follow him. So, and we all just point to Psalm 23 and just want to be like, lying in the meadow by still waters. That's true too, but it's not the only thing. Yeah. Carrie, you were asking about some practical outworkings of...
Yeah, so in some ways, we've talked a lot about how to see that kind of generation, that postmodern generation, Generation Z, millennials, as a mission field. Mm-hmm. But how do we see them as, once they enter into Christianity, how do we engage them well as the next generation of missionaries, the next generation of pastors,
right,
the next generation of elders or deacons or church leaders?
So I'm going to show you this slide. I didn't have time to get to it, but this was Jonathan Haidt, the NYU professor that I had referenced. He actually is, he's not a Christian, but I think he has some interesting things to say to us. He wrote this book called The Coddling of the American Mind, and the subtitle is How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. He's talking about Gen Z. Three main ideas. I realize this is small, so I apologize for that. There's psychological principles and the wisdom that comes out of it. First, he's talking about how to build character. And children are anti-fragile. You know, as I have a baby now, and I'm so careful to not, like, you know, hold him wrong, or like, you know, especially his neck, right? It's like he doesn't have neck strength yet, so you have to. But all our doctors have said infants are tougher than you think, right? They like take a licking and keep on ticking, right? So and I think we also need to, this is the whole snowplow parent thing, right? Also what Jonathan Haidt says about the peanut allergy, like we need to expose them to things in order for for them to have strength. So the wisdom here is prepare your child for the road, not the road for your child. And I think that's, it's good to expose them to a lot of things. It's like the idea of immunizations, right? They build up immunities to diseases by being exposed to the diseases in small quantities, of course, not large quantities. Two, we're all prone to emotional reasoning and the confirmation bias. Okay, this is an interesting one. So this is about critical thinking. I think social media dumbs people down, right? Because it paints everyone into black and white categories, us and them, and everyone's the enemy. Jonathan Haidt says, what's really important is to know that the enemy, in many ways, lies within our own hearts. The dividing line is not between us and them. The dividing line is between within ourselves. It's what the Apostle Paul said about, you know, like, why do I want to sin, or I do what I don't want to do? And the thing is, every one of us needs to check ourselves. we need to, when we think about ideas and we think about how to engage others, we need to be careful not to point out the speck in someone else's eye before we look at the plank in our own eye, right? And so every one of us has some good things that God has placed within us and endowed us with, and also some bad things. We have some sin rooted in us and that needs to become. So I think we should always like check ourselves and think about what we can be doing better before we engage others in, you know, to take them to task. So the wisdom here is your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own thoughts unguarded. But once mastered, no one can help you as much. Height gives an image of a rider on an elephant. The rider is the brain, the elephant is our emotions. And he's saying that we often think that this rider can control this elephant. In reality, most of us are controlled by the elephants. And so if you look at how we make decisions, although we like to think we're rational creatures, most of our decision making is actually pretty emotional. We don't, and we try to rationalize it. We try to say, no, it's the brain, that's actually, it's the rider. No, and usually it's the elephants. Yeah. So, and I think we need to realize that. And this even leaks into our politics, it leaks into our theology even sometimes. And so certainly in disagreements with other people, I mean, it's amazing what we can justify just emotionally, right? So, and finally, maturity. We are all prone to dichotomous thinking and tribalism. I guess this sort of tags on to number two there. Right, sorry, I just talked about this. The line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. So, so I think that instead of thinking of non-Christians, for example, as the enemy to be destroyed, or to liberal people or people we disagree with politically as the enemy, we need to think of them as the goal and the people, the treasure to be won, people to be won over, people to be loved. You know, I was listening to a podcast recently and they said that they interviewed people like 20 years ago and said, parents, and it's like, who would you be the most opposed to your kids marrying? And they surveyed them and most of the parents said like, people of another race or another religion. Those would be the biggest ones. Like another race or another religion, I would not want my kid to marry. Today, do you know what it is? Politics. Yeah, it's politics. It is someone of a different ideology. I would never want my kid to marry someone of another ideology. That they're of the devil, right? That's where we've come to in this day and age. And so, and I realize, you know, I do that too all the time. Even though I teach this stuff, I'm like, yeah, I totally do that. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'll make fun of or vilify or, you know, slight those who I disagree with, you know. And, but it's so easy to slide into that. And social media just exacerbates that. You know, I think what's a good thing to remember is that we should never say anything about someone that we wouldn't say to their very face. And so the worst of human beings comes out with anonymous comments. On the internet, you read an article and they have the comments section. People are so mean. It turns Dr. Jekyll's into Mr. Hyde's. The worst of everybody comes out in those comments. And unfortunately, I also see this in like, you know, our teaching evaluations, which are anonymous. Or even worse, ratemyprofessor.com. Like, I just don't even go there because it's the people who are the most bitter who go there. And they just like take it out. You know, it's like, whew. So, and, you know, this is the world that we live in. So I think we can translate all these into Christian principles, right? So. How do we train Generation Z to be more loving, to be more kind, to be more mature, to be more discerning, and to be able to minister properly. I mean, it's hard to minister when, you know, you're ministering out of your own, like, baggage, right? So, on the other hand, there's none of us that doesn't have some stuff. So to say you have to get your whole life together in order to minister also is unrealistic. So I think, it's got to be, but you got to sort out some stuff. Yeah.
Let's give Alan a thank you.
Thanks for having me here.